Rolling, keep those prices rolling. Walmart.
Yep. Everyone's favorite.
Checking levels. Looks a little hot. Much better. Chat, check, check.
Check, 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 check.
This guy.
So let it be silent for just a second while we get at room tone. Very nice. You can start talking. I'm grabbing a battery.
Okay. I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about. Are you actually recording this, or?
Oh, we are rolling right
now.
Oh, baby. I know with my massive fan base, it's really going to take off now.
I mean, you can always cut this in any sequence you like and edit it down, so.
Sir, I believe in the truth of what was said in the proper order. How dare you?
Whatever.
How dare you?
I do what I want. Ooh. That was hot, redlining, hot redlining. Mic, that thing, this one's falling down too.
Hot mic.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm nauseous.
Oh, Jesus. I'm nauseous.
I just need this battery on standby. I'm going to put this on silent. Boy. Is your phone on silent?
Let me put it on silent.
Thanks, bud.
Silencio.
My mom's going to call in the middle.
You think so?
No, I'm just kidding.
That'd be amazing. I hope so. Dude, she's on. I would want you to have it on speakerphone. All right. So, yes, welcome to Projecting. Yes, it is Projecting, Niels. I don't think I told you that. I'm here with my buddy Niels Naaman. He's an old friend from college, and it's pretty awesome. He's here visiting from Virginia right now, about to go to med school. We're going to talk about all the fun stuff that's going to school and whether or not we think education is worth it. I don't think it was worth learning books.
And we're going to talk about much, much more.
Indeed. Yeah, it's projecting, because I always tell people, I'm not yelling, I'm just projecting.
You definitely heard that defense.
Anyway, so yeah, Niels, I guess we could tell a little bit of that background story of how we met at the Frightened Rabbit concert.
God.
Oh, my God. Second year.
It was first year, man.
Oh, that's right. We did first year. And then all second year, we limited how we didn't live together year. And then, I remember Josh had that Spanish test the next day.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, let's go to this band that you don't know. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like a wonderful time. Let's go listen to a band I don't know. And I'm a little wide-eyed 18-year-old freshman. 19? 18? Oh, whatever.
19, I bet. No. Because
you were...
No, I was... No, you're probably 18.
I was 18, that's right. We turned 19.
No, I turned 19.
You turned 19 during it, yes.
Yeah.
He was like me, was way too old for his grade. But, yeah, he was like, oh, let's go see this band. And somehow I convinced myself to go, probably because it was a Spanish test the next day.
You had it, not Josh.
No, I did, as I'm saying. Okay, he convinced me to go. He knew the band. I didn't know.
Oh, bad choices, Greg.
Oh, no, it was a wonderful choice. And you had that beanie on with the big ball on the back, the fuzzy ball on the
I
end
still
of
have
the
that.
Cap.
Yep. I know. I wear it all the time.
And it was you and Aaron, right?
It was me and Aaron and
Josh
Borden.
Oh,
God. To say his name online. Ooh, Josh, if you're listening. thanks for going to that concert, man.
Well, we always say by his last name because we always have
because we have
Josh
more. We have more than one Josh. That's right.
But the so I remember I met. We were just like walking. We were like, oh, we're all going to the Frightened Rabbit show.
And me, on the other hand, I'd been listening to them for like, well, this is the end of January, so maybe like a month already. And I was like, yes, they're coming to Charlottesville. Who would have thought? They're like Scottish people. Why are they here? I'm definitely gonna go see them for $12 or whatever it was. You know. So,
well, dude, I remember, wasn't it the last stop of their tour?
It was, because they got really drunk.
Dude,
they got plastered. And it was like, this is the last stop of a tour. There's nothing here but rednecks. I'm just going to play a show.
Well, I remember he did Poke.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they cut all the mics, and he came out with acoustic guitar. He's just sweating his ass off. He's just drenched, and there's just beer bottles. All like, this is not an over-exaggeration. That stage was littered in beer bottles. It was just
ridiculous. But, I mean, it was a good show.
Oh, they played great. Yeah. They kept it together like good drunken stuff.
And I feel like they played nearly like the whole album. I don't...
Because that was for Midnight Organ Fight.
Midnight Organ Fight, that's right. The first one, their first album, I think I had it at the time, and they're like a couple good songs on it, but I don't really remember if they played any. If there were, I was probably just like, well, I don't know this song. Oh, yeah. Well. But it was a good show. Very good show.
Yeah, I remember we went to that show, and then we became friends.
Then we watched that Sigur Rós DVD.
Oh, hi, that's building. Right, the Chem building. Yeah, yep. At our school, you could go into the Chem building at night and just go into where there's 500-person. Yeah, used to. And you could go to their 500-person lecture halls and just, like, go into the computer and watch movies. So we watched, like, Serenity. Did we watch it?
Yeah, I don't think Serenity I was there for that.
Oh, I know Mark and I. No, that might have been... I think we might have gone to Gilmer for that. But anyway.
Gilmer was a lot harder to get into. The Chem building doors were always open.
But sometimes it was taken. So. It was occupied. But, wow. Yeah, dude. And then lived together third and fourth year. Went through... I will keep that to a minimum, the details of that. But we had some insanity in that household. And I'm not getting specifics. And we have many great, but lived with Trong and all that, all those guys. And vuvuzelas, retractable vuvuzelas were part of our story.
I still have mine.
Yeah, mine was thrown away. I know it was thrown away.
Womp.
I swear it was. Womp. And then, so you graduated. What did you immediately do? I know, so you were biochemistry. I always say biology. Mm-hmm. Biochem, BS.
Yep. I went to Istanbul afterwards. I mean, I went to Germany with my mom to, like, visit our family. Then we went to Istanbul for 2 weeks. And I came back and I started my job.
Scribe, right?
No. I started at the peak place.
Oh, yeah, peak.
So my job after college was I started at this drug testing company. And I pretty much extracted drugs from pee for a couple months before I decided that I hated it and did something else. I think everybody hates their first job if you have a full-time job, but I was like, oh my God, after about like 2 weeks, I was like, oh my God, I need to go back to school. So I was like, what do I want to do? So I started looking into like doing medical things, and I like shadowed a local doctor who Greg knows a lot about. He's actually from New Orleans. He's a funny guy. And then I just started going on that route. I was a scribe. And then I did everything else I had to do and applied to med school, and it worked out for me eventually.
What do you mean, eventually?
and this isn't really that big of a deal because, honestly, to anybody who's not really familiar with the process of applying to med school, which I assume is probably most people, if you take a look at a lot of your doctors, not necessarily all of them got in the first time they applied.
Which even more so now. Most of our friends didn't get in until at least a year out. Most of them did not go straight out of undergrad.
Well, the whole application process is a year. So a lot of people take...
Oh, you can't? Can you not go straight out of undergrad? Do you have to be
No, you can if you apply at the right time. The thing is, the process is a year.
Yeah.
So you apply in like June, and then you'll get admitted sometime over the year, and then you'd start the following August is the way that it works. And so a lot of people take time off. I took time off because I didn't know what I was doing. That's very common. A lot of people also have to apply more than once, which I did also. Which sucks, but you know what? If you really know what you want to do, it's worth it.
Well, my buddy, good buddy, my Brando, he started last year. He was a year ahead of us. It took him 2 years. My buddy Will is in PT school now. Mm-hmm. It took him 2 years. Like, everyone I know, like, I cannot think of any of my friends. The only Mark and Diego, two of my good buddies, are like some of the only guys I know who went to med school a year out. Like most of them,
yeah.
No, actually,
I think
Mark, they're fresh out of undergrad.
Mark went straight in, right?
Yeah, so did Diego. Actually,
I don't know
Diego.
They
were also, they're just my overachieving friends.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if you know, it takes like, I'd say it takes like maybe like a year and a half to 2 years to really like build a decent application. So if you really know while you're in undergrad that you want to do it, if you come in knowing, like so many people did at UVA, but then they changed their minds, I'm sure. You know, I mean, that happens. That happens all the time. You're like, oh my God.
Like all the comm school people switching to econ.
Pretty much. So if you know, you can really like build yourself up and apply like your third year of college, which I'm sure Mark did. And a lot of people are very successful doing that. So I'm glad I got to take time off. Can't talk. Took. Ooh, blah, 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 blah. Edit that out.
Nope.
I'm glad I took time off because it was a good experience to like work in the real world, you know, have a real job and be like, oh my God, this is terrible. I should do something I really care about. So, and just the experience of, you know, living on your own and being out of college and actually needing to do something is really a good thing that I'm glad I got to experience. Technical difficulties.
Yeah, that's stupid. I don't know if it's going to happen. This thing never reads right on you. But get it back up. No.
What? I don't know what you want me to continue with, Greg. You gotta
bring it back.
You gotta facilitate the discussion.
No, I'm not gonna do that for you.
It's your podcast, bro.
Making sure I didn't lose that track.
Alright, second one's back up and running. What are we? 10 minutes and 24 in on the track. Great. Cool. Now I technically, so you can see this is a very professional setup.
Absolutely.
What do we have? We have a stack of books on a laptop next to me, a stack of books, and just a sound bag pointed towards you right now.
And I'm sitting on the couch and it's...
Well, the couch is comfy. That's pretty comfy. Okay. That's okay.
Pretty comfy.
Hey, it's good enough for you to sleep on. It's good enough for you to be interviewed on.
That's not what I'm complaining about.
It's functionality, not form.
I know. I'm just lounging. This isn't what I expected when you do like recording. You know, just sitting back, one arm up. You know, that's not what I expected. I expect to be in like a really closed studio or like sitting really serious with the headphones, like those people downstairs the other day.
Right.
Yeah.
No, the podcast going on at Wayfair. So where we were saying the you enjoyed figuring out that you even want to go to med school and like what do you so I guess it kind of like winds back. We always talk about this education and like is it worth it? Is it worth like what?
It's a good question.
It's like something I have such a huge bone to pick. I get so mad about it. I start talking about like being called entitled and not because we you all got worthless degrees and da 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 da.
But the question is the education worth it? Well, is the education really that different than we would have received like 40 years ago when people would have considered it worth it, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I got a good education that was worth the price, but then again, I graduated and I had some debt, but I wasn't saddled with all that much debt from college, and I paid it off in this time period. You know, I feel like going to med school absolutely pay off because I'm pretty much guaranteed a job and a like really good salary forever. Which is fine as long as I decide to continue working in that field, you know. But
you don't think all the stuff with like Affordable Care Act and all that, or everyone's a favorite Obamacare, it's like they call it. Do you think that's going to change that at all? Do you think like that? Do you feel like there's any risk to your field now?
I mean, I remember actually at one of my interviews, I talked to somebody about this. I was like, look, I'm always going to have a job. You know, maybe some things will change, but honestly, the status quo is probably so entrenched that, you know, it wouldn't be worth it anymore for people to go to med school, to rack up that amount of debt and go into the field if they're going to make pennies, you know, for what they have to.
But you don't think like they're able to predict that, like, do you think people going to med school now can see if, do you think there's a risk of that happening in 10 years, 15,
I mean,
20 years?
I think, honestly,
I don't think it'd be that dramatic that quickly, but do you think there's going to be a drop in like wages?
I don't know, but I feel like there's certainly like a risk that I've thought about of, well, what if I, you know, only went to like a private med school that was very, very expensive. It was across the country. I had to fly there, you know, racked up a ridiculous amount of debt to do it. And then I go in the field and something happens and, you know, wages drop and it's just going to be terrible to pay off my debt. I mean, that's already honestly a problem that I think we're having because you have people who go into medicine who went to undergrad, went to a private undergrad, came out with 70K in debt.
If not more.
And then they go straight into med school and who knows where they go. And maybe they'll come out and with compound interest, you know, they're looking at 300, 400, 500K even when they graduate.
It's the same thing
for dentists. And I think it's actually worse for dentists, but I'm not that familiar with everything that goes into that. And it's the same for people who do DO, not MD, like osteopathic medicine instead, which is, I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to get into the difference about it or anything like the merits of either, because that's not really an important subject that I think of. But I mean, a lot of times osteopathy schools tend to be more expensive too. A lot of them tend to be private as well. So it's generally
more
expensive. Why is
that? Just because it's a smaller thing or it is more niche? What would you say? I don't know anything about it.
I honestly am not that familiar with it either, and I don't know why that tends to be the case. So... But I just know that a lot of them tend to be private, and a lot of the like top 10 most expensive med schools in the country, including MD and DO, they tend to be like private. So same with the DOs, they tend to be private. But I think the top one is the most expensive one. That's a DO school.
Okay. So,
I don't know. That's just how it goes.
What's it like dealing? I know since you've been scribing and stuff, do you ever have like other doctors like coming up to you and telling you that like, oh, Obama's ruined everything for you? Or like, do you ever have doctors that like, try to lecture you about the future of it and try to like steer you in certain directions?
So I will say that most, so I work in the ER, I work in a hospital north of Richmond.
And explain scribing, because like, I know it's my parents and all that, but how would you describe scribing?
So when you're a scribe, and you can do this, they're doing this in a lot of settings right now, not just in the ER, but the first place that it started just to speed things up was in the ER. But now, like, pretty much, you're a documentation specialist. That's what one of the doctors says. So you need to like document everything, and the doctors don't want to do it, or pretty much it takes up so much time that that's why they don't want to do it. So they have someone else do it who's familiar with the lingo, who can craft a note to their liking that, you know, pretty much shows what the situation is. Like, you know, you take the history, you say what the person's story is that they come in with, you kind of, you can do the physical exam too. That's something that I do. And then in the ER where you have something like continuous patient care.
But you do the physical exam sometimes?
Yeah, so it's...
That's interesting.
Well, really, most people have like almost like a set physical exam like phrase that auto-populates a note. And then you can just go in and change what you want. So it's not like I type up every single thing in the physical exam. It's kind of like I load what they have as normal and then I change it as they ask me to. So pretty much my job or any scribe's job is to document everything and speed along the doctor so they can see more patients.
Okay.
So in the ER, that's what I do.
Okay, cool. So what would you, like I was saying though, how would you, yeah, we're
talking about trying to dissuade me.
Or like, even not even dissuade you, but like talking about like, oh, you know, do they give you like the your generation does this talk, or the like Obamacare is going to make it so hard for you, or even say like, oh, the future medicine is great. I love the Affordable Care Act. Judging from the doctors I've been around, just my parents and all, like, I don't see a lot of that, but I'm also in a very specific world.
Sure.
And I'm not a doctor or in that world much, so
well,
I have a skewed perception.
First of all, you have to take into account that the people who work in the ER, I mean, they say there's like a lot of like burnout in the field because of the hours, which really doesn't tend to be the case, which I've seen from statistics. It seems like that it's the same burnout rate as there are for most specialties. But generally, I guess given like the hospital that I work in, it seems like most of the doctors tend to skew young. So they don't really have this kind of long-term perspective of, oh, I know what the field has been like. Oh, I can see where it's going and it's terrible. So a lot of the people don't really have a strong opinion on that. Only one person or two people have tried to dissuade me. There is one doctor who kind of complains about Obamacare, but he's still there and he's still gladly doing his job. But most people are more excited for the scribes to get in, to start their education, and to have them as like eventual coworkers. One doctor...
You're going to like it.
Oh, God.
Trust me.
I don't want to drink.
just... That's one I was thinking. I don't want to forget to give it to you.
Okay.
That's
so
it's one you're going to like.
As I was saying, one doctor who worked at the ER, and he's no longer there, he was really there when I just started. He left, and he like honestly tried to dissuade me to go into medicine. And I said, well, what reasons would you use to dissuade me? And he said, well, you know, the field has changed so much, and like you don't do anything anymore. It's all documentation. That's really all that I remember. And I was really intent on listening to what he had to say. And I actually like really took what he said to like what he said to heart. And I thought about these things. And I was like, well, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm still going to be doing what I want to do. I'm going to be working with people. I'm going to be helping.
So you saw it's just kind of like the nature of the like
well,
the specifics
well, hold
change
on, hold
of the
on.
Nature
I'm
hasn't.
I'm not done yet because,
oh, okay, sorry.
Because so there's this one person who really actively tried to dissuade me, and actually a couple months ago. So this was almost a year and a half ago when this happened. So I brought this up to one of the PAs at the ER, who I work with a lot, who I really respect. And she said, oh, I know him. Of course he would try to do that. He really hates working, and he just like is really not the right person to talk to about those kind of things. He would try to dissuade you. It's totally in his nature, so you really shouldn't listen to him, which I found to be absolutely hilarious, because she knows like a lot of the doctors from like way back, because she actually used to be a scribe. So I thought that was really funny that she was like, oh, of course he would say that. Don't take that to heart. And I was like, well, that makes me feel a lot better, because nobody else has actively tried to dissuade me except for him.
And the guy before that, like I was going to ask was, excuse me, God, no, what's going on? But
the guy who kind of complains about Obamacare a little bit.
Well, the one before, yeah, you were saying like, so would you say that like you kind of took that as, well, it's okay if the specifics of the work change as long as the nature of what I'm actually doing doesn't? Is that kind of what you took that as?
Well,
that's
I don't...
It sounds like you said you don't really care if it's documenting because you're still helping.
I mean,
people.
That's not... So that's the one guy who was complaining. The other guy who complains about Obamacare, really, I just kind of like don't agree with him on the reasons why. He's just cranky about it.
So. Well, how much? Yeah, we were talking about this too. How much do you think the frustration with doctors is as? And again, we both have like very skewed perspective. Yeah, versus, it's like because like I know some people were saying like, oh, you know, it felt rushed or we don't like the way it was implemented. But from what I remember, again, very very small world that I've been in. I'm more than the average person in tune with medicine, sure. But that more than the average is very very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I gathered, I feel like people were always resistant to electronic medical records. Like, that's just, it didn't even really start becoming a real conversation until 2012 or so.
It's because they made it, I guess they made it a part of the law, didn't they?
Late 2000s, yeah. Yeah. And do you think that people are angry at the way it was implemented or just don't want to deal with the massive change this late in their career?
Well, probably...
A bit of both, you think, maybe?
Probably the latter. Mm-hmm. I will say, people, no matter what system you work with, it's so big and all-encompassing to every part of your job that there are going to be problems with it and you're going to complain about it to a certain extent,
right.
You know? And I think that it is a good system because what happens sometimes is they take our system down for maintenance. And so everything has to go to paper then. And that is just all shit hits the fan. Nobody wants to deal with that. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to get the forms out to have to do it. It's more work for the scribes. It's more work for everybody doing everything by paper. So I think that especially in an environment like the ER where there's constant traffic and there's constant stuff that needs to be done, it's definitely beneficial there because it saves time. Someone who's more used to paper or just doesn't like electronic medical records or just doesn't like the system of having to deal with it, I feel like that's partly a generational thing for the most part. I know at the family practice I worked at, one of the doctors was like, I'm not dealing with electronic medical records, so he like changed the way he practiced so that he didn't have to do it.
Whoa.
So, and
how does he get around that?
I think,
like, how's he not forced to do it?
You know, I don't know because I don't know the specifics, but so this guy was a primary care provider, like a family doctor, and instead of taking on a lot of patients, he did what's called concierge medicine, which I think is becoming more...
Yeah, my dad's talked about that some, where it's like, sometimes they don't even take insurance. It's like, are you talking about that kind of system?
The
system, almost like these like boutique medical setups, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. What happens is you pay an upfront fee to your doctor or for the year.
It's like everything.
And they cover everything. Right. So that way they have like maybe like 500 patients and they just do everything for those people instead of maybe like the 1,000 patients and like the constant turnover that you'd have as like a normal person.
Right.
So.
I mean, I could see why some would be drawn to that.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you don't want to deal with the computer, if you're, you know, I don't know, what do they call that again with the poking? What do they call that?
Pecking?
Yeah, if you're pecking at the keyboard, you know, it's certainly going to save you time to do it like that instead of doing the medical records electronically. So, I mean, one of the biggest things that's really terrible, and there was actually a recent New York Times article about it that I actually saw, like, the day before I came to New Orleans, so like last Thursday or Wednesday, when was that, like the 26th or 27th of May, that was about how electronic medical record systems aren't synced. So it's really, like, a business model. They don't want to, like, competing health systems don't want to share their medical records with the other ones because they want to retain their patients. And because they think it's bad for business, they'll give away their trade secrets. But that actually has an impact on people's safety.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, I'm sitting in the ER.
A huge reason for electronic medical records is that, like, I could show up in ER in some hospital across the country and
they have everything.
A huge
reason
behind it.
But that's not what happens at all.
Exactly.
What happens is you come in, you know, even in the same city, you go to a different health system and it's like, well, you just had like X number of procedures the other day, which are directly involved in the problems that you're having right now. And we have no idea what happened because we can't access the medical records. So what happens is you get someone like me who has to call the other hospital system. And then, you know, it's in the middle of the night. It's like 3 o'clock on a Wednesday and everyone's like eating lunch or something. And you can't access the medical records office. And then whoops, it takes like 2 hours for them to fax it over anyway. And by that point, it's not even really that helpful. So,
yeah. But I feel like you'd have to do that with paper records anyways. I feel like there's...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I feel like it should be one system.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying therefore, sure. But that just makes me go back to the original thing of like, oh, I don't want to deal with electronic medical records. They're not helpful. I was like, I feel like you'd have a lot of the same problems when the medical records system slows down. You're kind of at the normal pace of what paper would be. But
sure.
That's my layman's outside view.
And then another thing with paper is like, You got to go back to the filing cabinet and grab it. You got to bring it
hopefully
up front.
Hopefully it's legible.
Hopefully it's legible. Hopefully you grab the right folder. Hopefully everything's in there. And I mean, we do have the same problems with electronic medical records because sometimes, you know, people have the same name. People have the same birthday, you know, and that can mess somebody up. People come in, they spell their name wrong. And it just so happens that the name that they spelled is a patient that's been here before. And you put everything under them and it's like, oops, it's on the wrong person, you know, but that's, again, a similar problem you had with paper. So.
Sure. And this is, I don't mind, I'm kind of not really switch gears, but I digress. Because I was, when we were talking, I also remembered you had this idea a while back when I was doing Reddit Doc up in D.C. And I think it was during that time,
mm-hmm.
or also a different time, we were walking to D.C. Mall, like the one of three times.
Yeah.
Where you start talking about your documentary idea, and you were saying, obviously, not like, oh, I have this ambitious project. You're just kind of like, it would be interesting to do this piece. And you're talking about when things changed. Was it the 70s or 80s?
Like 85, I think. So what happened?
Yeah, I'd love you to talk a bit about that. Sure. So I knew nothing about that. So fascinating.
Yeah, so this is something that I was kind of exposed to since I work at the ER. Yeah. So what happens
it's like
is...
really changed medical care in America.
I would agree with that. And I'd be interested to see, like we talked about, what the discussion was at the time. So since I've been working at the ER, one of the things that happens is... we're not a major trauma center. We're not a level one trauma center. That's somewhere else in the city. And most ERs aren't. It's only usually in cities that have the biggest services. They're able to do the most things.
New Orleans had one. It was like one of the only ones in the state.
Yeah. So we're not that where I work. We're just kind of a local community hospital, and we deal with everything that rolls in. But if something serious happens or you need brain surgery or something, we send you elsewhere. But in order to do that, there's a law that really encompasses that to make sure you're doing the right thing. It's called EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Transit and Something Act. I don't remember the abbreviation, unfortunately.
And love.
Sure. But really, EMTALA is like a very important document. Every single time we transfer someone, we have to fill out a form to make sure that they're going somewhere to get better care than we would be able to provide. Otherwise, if you don't do the form or you do it incorrectly or you're not sending them to the right place, you face like a $50,000 fine. So that's a big deal. I'm serious. Greg just made a face. So that's like, yeah, man, I'm serious. It's like a $50,000 fine or more. I don't know. But I know I've heard someone say, well, I don't want to have to pay $50,000 for this if we don't fill out the form. So it's a big deal. And so I started looking into that, and it turns out, and I knew a little bit about this before, that EMTALA is pretty much a law that was passed as part of another law in like 1984, 5 or 6. Pretty much it says that you can only transfer people to places where they can get higher care. And if you're in an emergency room, which is where I work, you have to accept anybody who comes to the door.
Which I think is almost the more relevant
part. That's the more relevant part, exactly. Because
like the bigger impact part.
Exactly.
Really.
So what happens is nowadays, well, let me talk about before first. What happened before, and I only know this from itching in that I've like looked into the past and like maybe like anecdotal hearsay about stuff, because I wasn't alive then and I don't know. But what would happen before is, you know, and there used to be a lot more ERs. A lot of them have closed down, and I wish I knew more about why too, but it might actually be part of because of EMTALA. But previously you would go to an ER, you know, and it actually mattered if you had insurance, if you could pay. And they'd probably try to screen you out in some circumstances. And I guess they eventually decide to make that illegal, because that's not cool if you're like having a serious medical issue. You know, you need help right now, no matter what. So it's awesome that they passed that act. And like
I said, save lives. I mean,
exactly. So, but now what happens is you have people who don't have insurance
just
coming to the ER for every little thing because they can't get care elsewhere. So, I mean,
The
good and the bad. So, I mean, on the one hand, you know, you're not turning away people who legitimately couldn't afford to pay, legitimately, you know, have psychiatric issues and can't hold down a job.
But that 30 minutes or hour could have gotten them killed.
Exactly. Right? Or what they also did is they would like patient dump before EMTALA. So, you know, you have someone who like, you know.
There's like the whole not, there's the only transfer to better care component.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you would patient dump somebody who you couldn't take care of, or you didn't want to take care of them on like another hospital. So, I mean, really, the way things have changed is now everyone goes to the ER, everyone can get served. But on the flip side of that, you have people who come to the ER for like non-acute issues because they can't go elsewhere. So instead of, you know, serious issues, you have it kind of like clogged up with like little things from people who are poorer, which I can definitely say from anecdotal evidence is the case. you know.
Or they have little things that they don't get fixed until it gets bad, and then they show up at the ER.
Exactly. A lot preventative exactly. Care. And I've seen this confirmed to me on Reddit before, and I've seen actual cases of this when I've been working of. Yes.
No, my parents both talk about it too. I mean, I think this is pretty, it's not too controversial to say that's what happens.
No, but here, I've got something more for you. What happens is, like, I've seen this talk about on Reddit, and like I said, I have actual cases of where I've seen this happen myself of, yes, people do get diagnosed with cancer in the ER. Mm-hmm. For real. Like, you get a CT because something hurts. Oops, you have a tumor, you know? It's pretty terrible.
What you thought was minor.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and these are obviously people who, like, don't have access to primary care otherwise. So where else are they going to go? You know, something hurts, so I better finally get it checked out. I don't have insurance, so I can only go to the ER. Here I am, you know.
Surprise, cancer.
And so my idea for the... Exactly, which is terrible.
I know, Jesus.
So my idea for the documentary was to look at what happened based on, like, news articles, based on,
you know, video. Interview the people who are part of the major...
Interview people who are part of it.
Yeah.
Exactly, who are part of the legislation, and to get a sense of what happened before, why it was made, and what happened afterwards, and what the aftermath is. And I think it was 1985, because I remember we're coming up on the 30-year anniversary of it, so, which is this year. So I'd be interested to see, like, what was the before, the during, and the after. And one of the big criticisms of it at the time was, it's an unfunded mandate. If you go to Wikipedia and you look at Mentala, it says, it's an unfunded mandate. Well, yeah, because you don't want people dying in the streets who can't afford to pay. So now we have the other side of that. And which is interesting because we have the healthcare mandate now, the ACA thing where everyone has to buy insurance, but you can opt out of that. You don't have to buy insurance. Because I know for me, luckily I have coverage, you know, I'm older than 26, I'm not on my parents' healthcare anymore.
Yeah, I'm going on to ACA.
Exactly. But the thing is, I made so little money scribing that I didn't qualify for Medicaid because Virginia didn't expand Medicaid. So pretty much what happened was I went to the ACA market to buy insurance. And it's like, okay, you know, I'm going to get some subsidies. I make, like, no money. You know, I should probably be able to find something that's really cheap for, like, $9 or $10 a month. So there's like a phase-out period where, like, I'm making too little. So according to Obamacare, I should be getting Medicaid, yet Virginia didn't expand Medicaid. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at $135 per month when I make, like, gosh, like, $500 a month. Could you imagine what would happen if somebody actually had to deal with that? And I'm like, lucky enough that, like, I can actually offset that because of my savings and, you know, help from my parents. But for people who are actually over 26 and don't make a lot of money for whatever
they're
reason,
trapped
they're trapped
in
states.
Because,
and I even called, I called the, the, like, ACA hotline to see, is this without subsidies? Is this with subsidies? How can I possibly pay $135 per month for insurance that doesn't even cover medical care? That's your premium that you just pay for the privilege of being covered, you know? So I called and they're like, yeah, you're supposed to qualify for Medicaid, but they didn't expand that. So you're actually the type of person who can, like, avoid the tax penalty of not getting insurance.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but I was like, well...
But you don't want to be uninsured.
Exactly. I was like, well, that's great that I won't have to pay the tax penalty if I can't afford insurance, because I can't afford insurance, technically. But I would really much rather have insurance than just not get the tax penalty, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, interesting consequence. You live and learn. But, I mean, I'll probably be going on, like, the medical school insurance plan when I start in August, which is a lot cheaper than just the regular one that I've been doing now through ACA. So... That's good. Yay, life is looking up.
Oh my God. So, I guess I'm going to switch gears a little bit back. This is a quick thing I meant to ask earlier. Have you tried using the website? Do you think it's this horrible monstrosity everyone makes it out to be?
I tried. I mean, yeah, I used the website to purchase insurance. It really wasn't that hard.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a big deal.
There was, like, one problem that I had. And I don't remember exactly what it was, because this was like nearly 3 months ago now that I, like, purchased insurance. So
yeah, technically I never made the purchase, so I can't 100% confirm, but I got to the last step to check all the stuff and then discuss with my parents, and it didn't seem too hard.
Yeah, it didn't seem too hard. It feels like they've fixed whatever was wrong with it. Now, I didn't go on when they launched it, so I don't know what it was like.
Yeah, it
could have
been garbage.
But I felt like it was pretty simple to use now. The one thing that I didn't like was I didn't want to get dental insurance. And it, like, wouldn't let me do that for some reason. It was like, choose a dental plan. Here's your final plan with your health insurance and dental plan. I, like, couldn't get rid of it. So that really kind of bothered me because I was like, well, I'm not going to buy dental insurance just yet. You know, hopefully nothing will happen. If something does happen, it honestly wouldn't be worth it because I go for like a cleaning and, you know, I'm going to be paying like $50 a month where I could probably just pay $100 for the cleaning that I go to.
Right.
So it wasn't worth it unless, you know, I have some kind of like terrible dental accident, which I hope I don't have between now and August.
That would be unfortunate.
Yeah. But so, I mean, even so, I could probably still afford to pay, luckily, the out-of-pocket cost. But it wouldn't let me do it without dental, and I don't know why that is. I did find out that through my, like, ER job, we had, like, a patient from North Carolina who said they moved to Virginia, and they're on Medicaid. And Medicaid in North Carolina covers dental, but it doesn't in Virginia. So these, like, little things that are different between the states, I guess, make a big impact. Because that's, you know, $50 a month that you'd be paying otherwise. So, and again, this was the rate where, like, I am not getting a subsidy because I don't qualify. So maybe it would have been cheaper if I, you know, if I'd actually qualified for a subsidy for the dental.
Yeah, buddy.
Pretty good, huh?
Louisiana wheat ale.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I really didn't want to have a beer today. I was like, let me just sink in those sweet gains from earlier. When Greg and I went to the gym this morning very early, which is not something that I rarely do, but I was like, these sweet gains, I want to keep them.
Worship at the Iron Temple.
Exactly.
Oh God, we'd make terrible bros. But God, speaking of which, this is as good a segue as any.
Oh, yeah.
How about Kung Fury?
Oh my God. Oh my God. So, I mean, when I got here today's Monday and I got here on Thursday, and I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, but Greg was like, man, you got to check out this trailer for this movie. It's so ridiculous. And it's pretty much a kung fu movie about a cop from Miami in
1985. Horrible dystopia Miami.
He's a kung fu cop and he goes back in time to kill Hitler. It's pretty much the gist of it. And the trailer was amazing. And
watch it yourself.
I can recommend it. We are not affiliated in any way.
It is so
funny. I was so entertained.
The movie's free on YouTube, so I mean, let's be real. You just need to go watch it. It's like 30 minutes.
But so I watched the trailer, and I was like, oh my God, this music is amazing. And like I told Greg earlier, it's pretty much more 80s than the 80s themselves. They took every single thing that was like crazy and unique about the 80s and just condensed it into a soundtrack, which is awesome and hilarious at the same time.
Alongside the most 80s movie that the 80s never produced.
Oh God, yes.
Dude, it's got Hasselhoff.
It has Hasselhoff. He even sings. I don't know what kind of song career he had before this, but the fact that he was even affiliated just either goes to show how incredibly enlightened and how much of a good sense of humor he has, or how crazy he is that this is taken seriously. But I think it's probably the first part.
He understood how hilarious it was.
Yeah, I think so too. So
you literally watch him go back and he hacks in time, hacks too much time, winds up with Viking women with
don't spoil
Uzis
it for them,
and
Greg.
Chain guns.
Don't spoil
and
it.
Drops the line. This is all in the teaser. So to be fair, I'm making sure not to give spoilers because it's all in the teaser. See, I'm smart about that.
There you go.
Spoiler alert that we're required for the internet. But hacks back in time to Viking women with chain guns and Uzis and drops the line, I'm a cop from the future.
So terribly amazing.
Honestly, the best 30 minutes I spent all weekend. in no way is that meant to be offensive.
Oh, that was amazing. We could not stop laughing. It was just...
I'm so glad that it just... Because it just came out like a couple days ago.
It has almost 10 million hits in like 3 days.
When we watched it, 7.6 million. The next day, just for funsies, we checked 8.6. And now earlier this morning, 9.6 million. So pretty much a million people a day are watching this complete glory.
After 7.5 on the first day, it's like, Jesus.
They did something right.
Seriously, it's easily going to cross 10 million. That's not even a question. He's going to get so much funding for whatever he does next.
So glad I watched
and
that.
And he's from Sweden. He was like, this is so yeah, the guy, he was the writer, producer, and star, or was the, he's from Sweden, and it's out 80s America to America.
Pretty much.
And after, you know, we were talking about this with Iron Sky, which dragged too long, but I think this film was the perfect length. But the, you know, Iron Sky was pretty funny, and that was a Norwegian?
I don't know, I don't remember.
I want to say Norwegian.
It definitely wasn't German. It was. No, I think it was.
It
Nordic.
Was definitely not German.
It was Nordic. It wasn't Nordic.
It was Sweden or Norway
or
somewhere
Denmark.
Up there. I don't think it was Denmark. I want to say it was Norway, but I got it. I got to double check that. But same thing. It was like these just ridiculous tropes from like. Just all, it was definitely making fun of like I don't know what Iron Sky is making fun of as far as stylistically. It definitely had that like American action film World War II, you know, but I don't know, it wasn't like Saving Private Ryan or anything.
I feel like it was a lot of like
just sci-fi, just a funny sci-fi.
A lot of like European stereotypes about America.
Oh yeah,
like,
definitely.
Like put in, and I didn't.
Palin's the president.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. I didn't really get that from Kung Fury. I think it was just trying to be like an 80s...
A funny homage.
Yeah, 80s homage to like the 80s, yeah.
Homage or homage? I can never...
I don't know.
Are both acceptable?
I don't know.
It's important, Niels. We need to solve this right now.
God, man, you bring me back to like my 7th grade vocabulary, you know? Things that I learned in middle school. I'm a functional adult. I don't care. People understand me.
People know I speak good and stuff.
Exactly. They know I do that English thing. Do you, Wibble?
Virginia represent. So, I'm trying to think. Oh, man. And trying to think of anything else. I mean, we've been revisiting Halo all weekend. You've never owned an Xbox, and you've played every single Halo game.
I know.
Except for, I haven't played it either. Halo Wars was like the RTS they made, which is dumb. But I just didn't want to play that on console.
I mean, I feel like I just never really got... I bought like an N64... I bought it for GoldenEye. I played GoldenEye. It was awesome. I have like a couple more games that
you
I don't really
said
play.
That. I have my N64 Perfect Dark, which is like better GoldenEye. Yeah, I said it.
Wow. I did. I mean, I rented Perfect Dark, and I.
The multiplayer is exact. It's the same people.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's the same company. It's Rare.
I didn't like the game. I didn't like the game.
No, but the multiplayer is exactly the same.
Is it? Okay. I felt like the game was hard to control. Yeah. It was a lot harder to control than GoldenEye.
Better guns.
Very good. But I bought an N64 in like 1999 for GoldenEye. I bought a PS2 for Grand Theft Auto 3, which was amazing at the time.
Totally worth the purchase.
Exactly. And then I pretty much stopped, and I just never played video games that much.
Except with me.
So, except with Greg. So he's going to feel special about that in his own little special way.
Yeah.
Just but please. Really, I've honestly really loved the Halo games. Like, the story is really intricate. Like... The games are really fun to
yeah.
play.
Yeah, at least not like yeah. a new innovative idea no, for certainly. A story, I, no, but it's
sure.
still fun.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
it's entertaining, and you know, although it got a little weird. We were talking about this Halo 4. It got a little weird at the end.
Emotional.
Yeah, I'm okay with emotional. I'm okay with having feelings, but it was just got like vaguely sexual with him and Cortana. Like, there's kind of this almost like romantic. I was like, I always saw them as best buds. Or, like, even, like, she had kind of a mother-son relationship with him.
Yeah.
Almost, sort of.
I honestly don't remember, because we played the early games such a long time ago. It was, like, 3 years ago. But
yeah,
I don't remember. I don't really remember the little details of their relationship.
I just remember them being much more banter. Like, she would, like, say something really clever and stuff, and he would just, like, look at her, like...
Yeah, but can you consider banter to be flirting, Greg?
It's much more... It felt more platonic.
Okay.
But I get they're going to this story of they're trying to do like what, you know, Mass Effect and all these games are trying to do now, where it's like, oh, human, machine, when do you cross the line and become a person? And
let's interject a
yeah.
love story.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even feel too much injecting a love story. I just felt like they're trying to make this point they've never tried to make. And it just kind of came out of left field. And I was like, which is the whole like AI, when is it a person? Can you fall in love with a machine? And is he, how human is the chief? And da 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 da. And I mean, I get that. I respect that. But it just kind of fell flat for me. I don't know.
I wasn't really that into it either, but...
Yeah. That's the thing, like, you, like, he's, like, more of a layperson, like, he's played it much more casually, even you, we were just kind of looking at it, like, take it or leave it. Like,
yeah, I mean, it certainly didn't ruin the game for me, but I was like, oh no, emotions!
When?
They love each other!
Who's this crazy villain you showed up out of nowhere and I have no context for?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, well, we already knew that was coming.
Yep. Oh, man. You have anything else for the cover, man? We're 45 minutes in, dude.
Are we?
We got a good medical coverage. That's like really the hard ground I wanted to cover, but honestly, like I'm happy with that. Is there anything else you want to?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just sitting back drinking a beer, sitting on a couch. Maybe
man,
I should.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what.
I'm gonna tell you what. What? I mean, I don't know if you can think of anything else. We can always come back later. I don't know if we're gonna have time for that round table.
Yeah, I wish we could do the round table, but I think the guys are gonna be hard to rally.
I'll be back.
I hope so. I'll bring my equipment to Virginia. We can do one traveling.
Dude, you're gonna be there in like a week. It's kind of weird because you're like never around, and all of a sudden like I'm here for like 5 days. It's like, bro out, and then it's like, okay, I'm ready. Like, not like actually ready. Like, I would love to like have you around more, but I'm like, well, I guess it's gonna be like 6 months before we hang out again. You know, and that's like,
oops. You were emotionally prepared.
Yeah, I was emotionally prepared, and that's like, oops, you're coming to Virginia in a week. Gotta hang out, you know. So that's
well,
awesome.
I'm only gonna be there for like a day.
Well, that's fine.
That'll be fun.
Better than no time. Exactly. You know,
no time like bro time.
No time like bro time. Indubitably.
All right, man. Well, thanks again, and that about covers it.
Of course, anytime.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg, and I will listen to all your podcasts
and
my glorious voice on the internet.
Yay. Cheers.
Cheers.
And I'll just let it run for a second. I want to get...